Hello, and welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I am John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is honored to have with us New York Times bestselling and award-winning writer Laura Griffin, whose new book, The Last Close Call, will be coming out in just a few weeks. But before we begin, I'd like to let those tuning in know the Poison Pen does have copies of Laura's new book on order, and we would be happy to hold one for you or put one in the mail. Just give us a call or go online to the Poison Pen, and we can connect you with this really wonderful book. Now I'd like to welcome Laura Griffin.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us today. My first question for you is, what can you tell us about Laura? Who was Laura before you became a published author?
Well, I got my writing start as a newspaper reporter.
Okay.
And I started in Nashville at a newspaper called the Nashville Banner. And then I later moved to Chicago and worked in the surrounding suburbs of Chicago. And so I really loved news coverage. I love covering the hard news stories. And so I always kind of had a fondness for crime fiction. And so when I started writing fiction, that was a good fit for me, starting with crime fiction.
What made you decide you'd been a journalist for a number of years? What made you decide now I want to write a novel? And what was that initial path to publication as a book author like?
Well, I loved reporting. I took a break from the field for a little while. My husband and I were transferred overseas, so I left my newspaper job and I did some magazine writing overseas, some travel writing. I loved that. But then when I started kind of entering we moved back to the United States and I started thinking about what I wanted to do next. I decided fiction. And one of the things about when I was working for newspapers, I read newspapers all the time. I read like four newspapers a day to try and keep up with all the current events in my area. And I kind of burned out on reading all the time. And so when I took a break from journalism, I fell back in love with reading. And that was just a joy for me, to fall back in love with reading again and to have time to actually read for pleasure and not just read because I had to read for my job. So I just started reading voraciously and started finding what types of fiction I really loved. And that's what I decided I wanted to write.
Great. Your new book, The Last Close Call, comes out in just a few weeks. What can you tell us about the book?
Well, this book is, and I'm so excited. I just got my author copies yesterday, so I was so excited to unpack the box. This book was inspired by what happens a lot for me is current events. You know, I still keep up with a lot of newspapers and I'm always reading headlines and trying to get ideas for new stories. And in this case, you know, I've written a lot of crime stories about investigations, murder investigations, police investigations. But the field of genetic genealogy is just turning everything on its head right now. Genetic genealogy is when police are able to use a DNA profile, but instead of just tapping into the FBI database like they have in the past, they started getting the help of genealogists to help them locate a suspect through that little bitty DNA profile that they may have lifted from a crime scene. So it's just changed everything. And there's all these cold cases. I mean, you turn on the TV and you see them in the news, you know, cases that have been dormant for decades, and they're finding the perpetrator now and tracking these people down. And oftentimes they're in their 70s and 80s, and they think they've gotten away with murder, literally for their entire life, but the police come knocking on their door. And so it's really changed the field of police investigation. And when I started reading about this new technology that's being used, I just knew I had to write a story about it. So in the book, the heroine of the story is Rowan Healy, and she's a genetic genealogist. And that's kind of the basis for the spark of the story.
And she was like helping, I guess, not in the non-professional world, but just general lay people. But then she kind of got drawn back into crime solving. Is that correct?
That's right. She, well, I'm sure you've heard about the home DNA kits that a lot of people are using. Some people want to trace their ancestry and find out, you know, about their, you know, ethnic background. Other people are interested in tracing their relatives and finding out, you know, maybe an adoptee wants to find their biological parents. And so there's a lot of people that have bought these home DNA kits and they've used them. And At first, people were just uploading their profiles and they were just being amassed into a big database, and police had started tapping into that, unbeknownst to a lot of people, and using it to help solve crimes. Well, when they did that with a famous case in California called the Golden State Killer, they uploaded a DNA profile and they were able to track down this person that had eluded them for decades. It kind of made a big splash in the news, and people started realizing that these home DNA kits were actually an investigative tool. So now it's a little, you have to opt in now. If you upload your profile, you have to opt in to allow law enforcement to use it if they want, but a lot of people are opting in. And so there now there's just this huge database of DNA profiles. So it's just provided a whole new type of leads for the police. And Rowan is the person who has the talent to combine not just knowledge of DNA, but she also understands genealogy research. And that's a whole other field. And so she's kind of able to combine those two worlds, the science side and the genealogy research side, and help police track down someone's family tree and zero in on a suspect. So that's her talent. That's her superpower.
And in this case, the police presence in your new book is an Austin detective. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So I live in Austin, Texas. And so I've set quite a few of my crime stories in Austin. It's such a vibrant city, and there's just so many contrasts here. You know, it's this bustling city. It's got a really thriving art scene and music. Then it's also surrounded by this rugged Texas hill country. So you've kind of got a lot of contrasting settings, which is fun from a plot perspective. So you can, when you're writing your story, you can choose different locations for things to happen, for exciting, you know, action scenes or things to unfold in the story. So it's set in Austin, and the hero in the story is the police detective who's really trying to track down this perpetrator that's eluded him for years. And the heroine in the story is this genetic genealogist who lives in Austin, and she's taken a break from helping police, but he kind of lures her back in. He persuades her that this case is important enough that she just has to come out of, she just has to come help them.
What I had noticed that you had written that I thought was particularly fascinating is a lot of people think that authors, when it comes to fiction, can make everything up, because it's a novel. You don't have to really worry about that. But you had written something that was really quite perceptive. You said fiction has to have a ring of truth to it so that people can relate. And I think that kind of is very true. You can make a lot of stuff up, but there has to be some foundation in the real world. Does that come from your journalism background? Is that something that you believe all of your books have a core to?
Yes, it absolutely comes from my journalism background. I mean, one of the things in my job as a reporter was, you know, if you get even the slightest fact wrong, you will hear about it the very next day. Some people may even show up at the newspaper office, you know, in a huff because you know, got someone's name mixed up or something like that. So I learned to be a real stickler for all the little facts every time I was working on a story. So it's really important in journalism, but I think it's especially, it's important in fiction, but I think especially in crime fiction, because I find that people that like to read crime fiction, they really want to see those plausible details, because if you just make it up completely and it's not plausible, I think a lot of people that read suspense and crime fiction just kind of, it's kind of the eye roll, and you lose your audience. So, and you know, some of my very favorite authors are so good at that. Patricia Cornwell or Kathy Reichs or some of these authors that really weave a lot of forensic twists into their stories. And in order to do that, you really have to know what you're talking about. And so research becomes important. And I love to do research for a book. And that's probably also from my journalism background. I love to call up an expert in some field and, you know, kind of pick their brain for details that will help the story. So that's to me, that's one of the fun parts of writing.
Do you also draw upon your research skills for the investigative side of the book? I mean, do you tap into police contacts, or I think at one point you actually attended a FBI training or some type of training?
Yes. Yes, I love to do that, because to me, I really feel like one of my first newspaper editors was the person who drilled this into me. He said, do not write from your chair. Get out of your chair. So instead of getting on the phone and sitting in your chair and researching your stories, he was always telling me, get out of the newspaper office and just go talk to people where they are. And so I really took that aboard, and I do that for my books. I like to not just interview people, but interview them where they work. So, you know, if I'm interviewing one of the fun ones that comes to mind, I did a story where the heroine was a forensic anthropologist. And so I went to a place in Central Texas called the Body Farm, or they call it the Body Ranch. It's a ranch in Texas where it's a portion of it has been used for research, for forensic anthropology research. And so I got to go down there and talk with a forensic anthropologist and learn all about how they study human decomposition and just their research work that they do. So, but you know, those types of field trips are really fun. And I love doing those every time I start a new story to try and just get out there and learn from people in the field.
That's fascinating. You write suspense, romantic suspense, different kinds of thriller suspense types of books. What do you think, what are the key ingredients necessary to create a good suspense novel? What do you think has to be there?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I think one of the keys that I find over and over is pacing the information that you give to the reader, because, you know, from the very first page, from the very first sentence, you have to have some sort of question that you plant in the reader's mind. I mean, even just in the first paragraph, which in news we call it the lead, you really want to be hooking that reader from that very first paragraph. And so it's about planting questions in people's minds and then slowly doling out the information to reveal the answer to the questions at a pace that you control. So that if you answer all the questions in the first two thirds of the book, then people aren't going to finish your story. So you really have to save all your revealing clues and kind of pace them along. But by the same token, if you withhold too many clues from the reader, and I think you kind of lose people's interest. So you have to kind of be very judicious about how you dole out that information a little bit at a time.
It's fascinating. That kind of leads into my next question about your writing process, because I know some writers just kind of sit down and hope that things are going to come together. I would think that with your kinds of books and the twists and turns, you might need a roadmap to kind of lead you. When you start a book, what does it look like to you?
Yeah. Well, I'm a very visual person. So for me, I've kind of got it's a very visual map. I do a storyboard and it has photographs all over it. And it might be people that look like the characters in my mind. It'll be photographs of the setting where I'm setting the story. Maybe a vehicle that's in the story, or just little bitty snippets that just bring to mind parts of the story to me and keep my head in that story world. So I have that visual storyboard that I use. And then I also, I like to do note cards with the plots so that I can rearrange them. And to me, especially in crime fiction, I think pacing is very important. And so I'm always trying to make sure that that pace keeps going and that I don't have any lulls in the story. And if I do start to feel like the story is slowing down and I'm kind of going to lose interest, I like to maybe rearrange a little bit and put an action scene and kind of pump up the volume a little bit. So, but the visual organizers are really helpful for me from a writing perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting. You talked about the writing process. Your books you've written standalone and series. Do you always know when you're starting a book, this is the start of a series, or this is going to stand by itself, or along the way, does a book surprise you and say there's more to this that needs to be told?
The longest running series I've written is the Tracer series. And the Tracer series is based on a forensic lab where these forensic scientists known as tracers work and solve crimes with different forensic specialties. So when I started that, the first book in that series called Untraceable, I knew that it was going to be the start of a series. But what surprised me was as I wrote book after book, all these new people would kind of come into the story, new character, and somebody who might be just a minor walk-on character, have one scene in book three, ended up having an entire book for book six, where it was the focus of their forensic specialty. So I had a, for example, I talked about the forensic anthropologist. She had come into a story on a previous book. It's just kind of an expert that they consulted as they were trying to solve the crime. And then later, several books later, she had her own book where her specialty area was the focus of the whole plot. So, and that's fun to do because I think readers, they get to know your characters and they kind of feel like they're almost friends with people in your story world. And then they like it when you bring them back for their own book. So that's been a lot of fun over the years to kind of revisit characters that I've introduced in previous stories.
Yeah, you kind of get the best of both worlds as an author because there's advantages to writing something that's standalone versus their advantages to the series. For some readers, they don't want to start a series if they can't begin at the beginning. For other readers, the first book is the most important. Last Close Call is billed as a standalone. Could that change?
Yeah.
So right now it's going to stay by itself.
Well, I never say never because once I've kind of created a cast of characters, you never know which one might come back in a future book and kind of inspire the next full length novel. So there's definitely a whole cast of interesting characters in this book. So I might visit it at some point.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. You have been writing for a number of years now. If you had the advantage of being able to go back to when you're first starting out as an author, what advice would you give yourself? What would you tell yourself? This is what you need to know about the business of writing, about the business of publishing.
Well, publishing has changed so much since I first started. When I first started, digital publishing was just kind of in its infancy. And so it's changed everything about not only how writers become published authors, that's changed a lot. And a lot of people now are starting with an indie path where they publish independently and then they end up getting with a legacy publisher. So that's completely changed. But just the industry itself, I mean, so many more people read digitally now. People read on their phone, people read on their Kindle, people, a lot of people toggle between multiple devices. They'll start a book in print, they'll listen to chapters of it on their audiobook, and then they'll finish it on their phone. So the format has just changed completely, which is interesting. I think I would tell an aspiring writer, just be adaptable because things change every year. It's constantly a moving target, but what remains the same is just, if you love writing, if you love creating a story, that doesn't change. The format is different, but the core thing that you're doing is that you're creating a story, and that stays the same.
That's great. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Laura as a reader. What have you read this year that you'd like to share with others? Are there any?
Oh gosh, this year, that's a long, many months. I've read I read a lot of suspense, as you can probably imagine. The one I finished most recently, I just had this, this was sitting on my to be read for a while. It's called Good Bad Girl by Alice Feeney. And I just finished it for a book review that I was going to do for it. And it's an excellent book. This, if you don't know Alice Feeney, she's a British writer. And so a lot of her stories are set in the UK. And this one was set in London, and it was a very twisty story. She's known for doing surprising plot twists in her book, and this book was no exception. She had a lot of little twists and turns that you didn't see coming. So that was interesting.
That's great. Do you find yourself sticking pretty much as a reader to crime and suspense fiction, or are you more across the board different kinds of books as a reader? What has your journey as a reader been like?
Well, I really like to read a variety of, especially if I'm working on a real kind of serious mystery plot or suspense book. Sometimes I like to read complete completely different things in my free time. Like I'll read romance, or I'll read something that's kind of more humorous, or I'll read something that's nonfiction. So I kind of read all over the map, just depending on the mood. I just kind of read a lot of it. I kind of like to take recommendations from friends and other authors that I know, because, you know, if someone recommends something to me, that's like the best way to get a new idea for a book to read. So I just kind of listen to my friends and what are they reading and what are they recommending? And that's kind of where I get a lot of ideas for that.
I think that's really a smart thing to do. And I'm glad she brought that up, because I know there's a lot of people out there who are trying to find something good to read, and they will rely sometimes on just stars or bars or things like that on social media platforms, and they can't understand later why they're disappointed in a particular book that got 5 stars from everybody else. But I think when you look, as you say, when you look to someone that you trust, whether it's a friend or a fellow author or a bookseller or a librarian or somebody like that who knows you, your success rate as a reader is much better at finding something.
I agree. And a lot of times those online reviews, there's ways that they are manipulated sometimes. So I prefer to word of mouth. I think it's a little bit more reliable than just going by only online reviews as an indicator.
I do want to ask you about one book that apparently is a favorite of yours that, to be honest, was not one of mine, but perhaps you can tell me and others listening in why The Catcher in the Rye should be something on everyone's reader shelf.
Gosh, I think the reason I'm so fond of that book is I read it at such a formative time. As many people, I read it in my, I believe it was my freshman English class. And I just liked a lot how the author, the characters felt very accessible. And I wasn't really accustomed to reading assignments for English class that I felt like I could relate to the characters, and they seemed accessible to me. And so to have this kind of teenage character, he was, I believe in the story, he's maybe 18 or 19, and he's kind of had it with his school, had it with his parents, had it with his surrounding people. And he just kind of is kind of a cynical person at such a young age. But as a teenager reading that, it really spoke to me. And I just think that book hit me at the right time when I was that age. So I haven't read it in many years. So I wonder how it would come across now. But when I read it as a teenager, it really spoke to me.
Wow. Well, I am. It's one of those things where you never know how a book is going to hit a particular reader, but I was surprised because you're not the only one. There was a book that came out several years ago that was turned into a movie called My Salinger Year. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but it's about a woman who goes to work in publishing.
No, she wants to be a writer.
Yeah, she wants to be a writer, and she goes to work in New York publishing for the same publisher that was Salinger's publisher, and her job is to sift through all of the fan mail that he continued to get even 20 years after the publication of Catcher in the Rye. And she would just be amazed at these letters that people would write in about how this particular book changed their life, how they had read it over and over again, how he was tapped into their hopes and dreams and fears and things. I'm thinking, okay, there are certain books that are going to really draw in certain readers, but that showed me that sometimes that's what a book can do.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about?
Yeah, and it's subjective. Reading is subjective, even when you rely on word of mouth.
Yeah, and sometimes I think the other thing for anyone listening in is sometimes it's not the right time for you in a book. Sometimes you can get a book and it's not going to connect with you, but a year later, 2 years later, whatever time period you go back to, you think this is really something I am enjoying, just because things change, circumstances change. So maybe put a book aside, but don't always give up on a particular book.
That's right. Yes.
We're rapidly coming to the point where we're going to run out of time. So I want to give you some time to tell us about what's coming next, if you'd like, from you as an author. I know you just have a book coming right this month, so it's hard to think to the future, but is there anything you can share with us?
Well, in this, so the last scene alone is, I mean, the last close call is a standalone. In the spring, I have a new book coming out in a series that I write called the Texas Murder Files series. And the new book in the series is called Liar's Point. And it's a murder mystery set on the Texas Gulf Coast. And that book is coming out in May. And it's part of the series, the Texas Murder Files.
Oh, that's great. How can readers learn more about you and your books? Are you on social media? Do you have a website? Are you a book TikToker?
Yes, all of the above. Well, actually, I'm not on TikTok, but I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and also my website has a lot of all current information about all my releases and book events and things like that. And it's lauragriffin.com. So you can go there and also link to my social media buttons too.
Wow, that's great. I can't believe 30 minutes has flown by so quickly. We've been honored to have with us virtually at the Poison Pen author Laura Griffin, whose new book is The Last Close. Am I getting the title wrong again? Let me check. Last Close Call. I was going to throw home in
the
there.
Last Close Call.
The Last Close Call, which will be out soon. I want to thank Laura for taking time to visit with us and share about her new book and her writing. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.